Before we dive in, two things. First, thank you. Listeners like you are why we do this. Our team works hard on every episode to ensure we bring you the best content possible. Second, it's a gift-giving time of year. People ask us all the time, what's your setup or what's your favorite gear? We put all of our favorites together in our new Generation Leader gift guide. Find recommendations for those hard to buy for people on your list and get them something great this year. Find the gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift and we'll keep this up to date all year round. All right, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the New Generation Leader Podcast. We're giving you the tools you need to lead in the digital world. Ready to reach your true potential? This is the New Generation Leader Podcast.
From college athlete to leadership consultant, David takes us down the road of his own life story, the trials and tribulations, the highs and lows. And what I found most interesting in this conversation is how open and honest he was about what has happened, the challenges he has faced on a personal level, and how that has shaped and molded him into who he is, the kind of leader he is today, the things he's accomplished, and his outlook on where he's headed in raising up the next generation of student athletes, leaders throughout industries and sectors. So let's dive into our conversation with David Kitchen, aka Kitch. What do you go by most of the time?
Everybody except my mother calls me Kitch.
Okay. That was the answer I was going for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the real question. What does she call you?
David.
Okay. First and middle name and last name, or just middle name
also. Yeah. If I'm in trouble, I get the middle. I get David Edward if I'm in trouble. But yeah, aside from her, man, everybody calls me Kitch, even my brother.
Hopefully she's not calling you David Edward too often these days.
Nah, not as often anymore. You'd be surprised though. I still get it once in a while.
Not as much trouble and more in the realm of she's mad about something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I'm going to start with this question. Kitch, as you head into this fall football season, this one looks a little bit different for you. Walk us through the transition and what that transition looked like for you from the last chapter to this chapter.
Yeah, man, we talked a little bit about it before we kind of got into the show. Like, this is the first year in probably 20 years for me that I'm not gearing up for a football season, not getting ready to be on a sideline somewhere. And so it's been really unique. It's come with its challenges. So to kind of give you a little bit of context on how this came about. So I've spent the last 10 years as a college strength and conditioning coach. I've had Edge Leadership Academy for 3 years, but I was still able to coach at a smaller level while I was running my business. So I was still able to coach. I came back to Susquehanna University, small D3 school, which is my alma mater, was able to be the head strength coach there and still run my business. And then the business scaled to a point where I kind of got that fork in the road, and I always knew it was coming. As soon as I started the business, you know, and I realized like, oh, I kind of have something here. Like, this is starting to grow. I knew there was going to come a time where I would have to make that decision. I didn't think it would come as quickly as it did, which is a good thing. You know, it's obviously a very beneficial thing for us. We grew to somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 clients, you know, and in both the corporate and athletic sector. But it kind of got to a point where this summer came around, and, you know, in Division III, there's no athletes on campus. So I had my summers off. And so it was perfect for me because I could go focus on the business for 3 months, then jump back into football season, you know, and do the same thing the next year. And so this summer came around, and actually my younger brother got diagnosed with cancer. He's 26 years old, and it was his second bout with cancer. Beat it. You know, he's in remission now. And so he's a savage, man. He's a warrior. But as he was going through that, it threw a wrench in what I was able to do, because I obviously couldn't travel like I had in the past. And so normally over summers, we do our summer campus tour where we're traveling around the country, working with college athletics teams about leadership culture. And this year we weren't able to do that because, you know, he got sick and I put everything on hold. I said, hey, cancel the summer tour. You know, we're not doing that this year. And in doing that, I actually ended up building a lot of momentum in the corporate space because I didn't spend 3 months out with college clients and doing that. So we built a lot of momentum in the corporate space. And so it got to be the end of summer, and I kind of had this decision in front of me, and it was like, okay, what are you going to do here? Are you going to risk the momentum that you've built to where this business could be, you know, what you do for the rest of your life? and continue to coach? Or are you going to rip the Band-Aid off that you knew was coming and finally hang it up, you know? And so I put it off as long as I possibly could. We got to mid-July, and then I finally sat down with the athletic director and had a conversation. And, you know, luckily for me, they're extremely supportive of what I've been doing. They knew what it was when I came back and was coaching there. And so made the decision to walk away. But man, it's been weird. It's like you get this like bittersweet feeling watching everybody else strap the pads on. And, you know, a lot of my friends are still coaches. I've got friends in Division I, Division II, Division III in high school, and even the NFL, you know, and to see them going back to camp, I'd be lying if there wasn't a piece of jealousy in me. But I also feel like, you know, I've done what I wanted to do. I did what I wanted to do in the college world. I did what I wanted to do. Football has been the vehicle that have given me all these opportunities that I have now. So I guess I'm at peace with it, but it doesn't make me, you know, any less miss the game. I still get goosebumps, man. You know, I still get fired up. If I could go back and strap it up one more time, I would. I'd probably get hurt, but I'd do it.
I have that dream every now and then. Even my stress ball right now as we're recording is a baseball. I still wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, and I'm waking up from a dream of stepping onto a big league field. And that dream's been dead for me for about 25 years now.
Yeah, it never goes away, man. I used to tell the kids all the time, like, dude, soak this up. Because even as a coach, it's not the same. You know, game days were awesome. And even as a coach, you get so jacked up, right? But then you got nowhere to put that energy because you're not going out on the field. So you're getting fired up before the game. And then you realize, like, man, all I can do is give these kids, you know, the best instruction and coaching that I can and let the chips fall where they will. But I can't line up on third down. You know, I'm past that. So, yeah, man, it's a really unique thing. And I think athletics, you know, shapes so much of who you become as a person.
You know, Ketch, when you're that student athlete, though, and you're going through it in the grind, maybe more so at the high school level, probably maybe at D3, more so than say the P5 levels of D1. A lot of times you're going through those days and you hear a coach tell you that, man, soak this up. And a lot of times it doesn't really resonate. You're like, what do you mean? I'm dying out here. I don't. But then when you do get away from it, it's like the Al Bundy rethought. You know, you're reliving those glory days and you do wish they were back there and you do wish you had soaked it up more. So it's really interesting. You said one thing that, you know, you felt maybe a little jealousy when you're realizing your buddies are out there coaching. And I did kind of chuckle a little bit when I got out of high school. I missed it for about a day. But then what I didn't miss was at like 8 or 9 o'clock that night, I was going to bed. I wasn't watching video anymore. I wasn't like pouring through it. So my guess is you probably, you know, you think back about that, but I'm guessing, like, do you miss that part of sleeping 3 hours a night? Or
man, I gotta be honest, I kind of do. Like, I love the process. Like, I didn't when I was a younger coach, but as I got older, I got this real appreciation for like the process of a game week, right? And the idea of Sunday, you know, we played on Saturday, you wake up on Sunday, you watch the tape, you get yourself going, get prepared for the next week. And then like the incremental gains that you saw throughout the week, you know, of ramping it up, like Monday, you're pouring the concrete, Tuesday, you're forming it up, Wednesday, you let it harden, Thursday, you start to run a little bit, and then it's fast Friday, then it's go again, you know, so there is that piece of it that I do miss is like, you know, like I said, I think as you get older in the coaching profession, you start to have this appreciation for the process that's really unique. And so, yeah, I mean, I do miss that. I can't say that I miss, you know, 3 months without a social life and 3 months without seeing family or friends or anybody, you know, other than the 100+ people that are part of the program. I don't miss that part. But I like the day-to-day, man. It got to a point where I like that grind. Like, that was kind of my MO as a coach was I'm first in, last out. It's just who I am. And so, yeah, I think I'll always kind of miss that. But I've been able to apply it to business. So I think it's changing one avenue to another and trying to apply it in a different context.
So let me go back a little bit, if you don't mind, to your days in strength and conditioning, and especially there more so than position coaching or anything else. When you're that person, you know, you're there during the summer grind, during the lift, during the early mornings. What led you into the idea of developing or wanting to develop leadership skills or building culture skills? Talk to me about that. Like, where was that background? How did that come from? Did it come from the time you spent, because you're spending time with those kids that and probably developing relationships that are a little deeper maybe than even some of the position coaches, let alone the head coaches?
Yeah. You spend more time with those kids than anybody else in the program, especially at the higher levels where the hours are literally counted, you know, of how many hours they can spend with their coaches and stuff. Strength coaches fall outside the realm of that. And so we get a lot more contact with the kids. But my drive for leadership and my drive for building a culture goes all the way back to high school. I was really, really lucky and really blessed to be a part of a program at Berwick High School in Pennsylvania. That is the list. Actually, every year they release the ESPN list of the top 25 programs. And this year they did a special edition with the top teams, and two of our teams from our high school were on there. And so I was really fortunate to grow up in a culture where it was literally God, family, football. You know, that was what, that's what the sign says when you pull into town. And so I saw culture and I saw leadership at a really young age. And I didn't, again, you don't appreciate it then, you know? And so I didn't really know. But then when I got to college, and then as I got into coaching, I was, had that frame of reference to look back on and say, okay, this is what it's supposed to look like. Like, this is what elite looks like. And so using that, I went back and I just thought, like, okay, when did that happen for us? When did I start to see that, right? And, you know, using my sports psychology background and my psych background, I thought about it. And I'm like, the number one way to build trust is through shared adversity, right? And so what better time to do that? What better time to do that than through those summer hours and those summer grind sessions when you're going through it, man, and you want to figure out, I'm going to war with these guys. I want to figure out who's going to back down and who's going to step up in front of us and lead us, you know? And I think there's a lot of natural opportunities that occur during summer because it is so difficult for people to step up and be leaders. The other thing, as I got older in my career, was realizing that I can manufacture those. Being the coach and being in charge, I can manufacture that. So if I can identify in certain guys, hey, this dude does really well keeping his composure in adversity, let me put him in a leadership role when things really get hard. Like, so it's starting to figure out who on your team, like we always say, like KYP, right? Know your personnel. So it's figuring out who on your team fits those traits or has some of them in them, even if they're not necessarily the dominant traits that they show all the time. You can see it. Like, you can see when things are getting really hard and you're even days where you're ripping into them and you're yelling at the guys. Like, I'm looking to see who's that guy that's locked eye to eye with me and they're in it. Like, that's a guy that I want leading this program, right? So I think that's where it started. And then from there, you know, I kind of did things backwards from other people, where most people get the education first and then they try and add the experience on top of it. I kind of went experience first. And then once I figured all these things out throughout my coaching career, went back to school and got a PhD in psychology, and well, finishing a PhD in psychology. And then I put it all together from there. So it really stems all the way back, man, all the way back to 2008 to 2010 when I was playing, or 2007 to 2010 when I was playing high school ball.
College athletics is in the midst of colossal changes. From NIL to the transfer portal and conference realignment, athletics programs are facing mounting pressure. How are these pressure points affecting your leadership? The waves of change require a different approach to building programs, leading teams and departments, developing players, directing coaches, and in how you think about athletics. It's becoming too easy to leave and too hard to create trust. This requires you to think better, communicate better, lead better, perform better, be better, every single day. Better can help. Better has built the very best of 21st century leadership thinking and tied world-class content to simple technology to help ADs, administrators, coaches, and athletes thrive in the midst of the chaos the athletic world is facing. As a listener of the show, Better is offering a unique opportunity for your college program or high school team. Better starts with you. Learn more at newgenerationleader.fm/better.
If you're anything like me, keeping up with all the people you know is hard. I forgot Tom's birthday. I had a meeting in town and forgot Jamie lives here now. Who was that strategic planner I met last year? Clay is a game changer for me. It puts all of my connections, contacts, text messages, LinkedIn connections, all in one place, reminding me about what and who is most important. Then, every morning, Clay's AI engine reminds me, birthdays, who I should reconnect with, and lets me take notes so I remember important details. Safe, secure, and thoughtful. Clay, the AI-powered system for cultivating amazing personal and professional relationships. Try Clay for free today at newgenerationleader.fm/clay.
So when you're dealing with some of these kids, and I'll go to the, you know, when you're getting into some of them, the way it happens, right? Mm-hmm. So do you have a system or a way that you cipher through? Because some kids, it's probably more noticeable now, I think some kids are great at eye contact and they're great at just focus right there. But there are other kids who there's a tendency or just something built into them where they they may not make eye contact. They may actually look away a little bit. But a lot of those kids, when you find out they've heard everything you said, they just have a little bit different way of, have you experienced that, number one? And number two, how do you adapt, or do you adapt your style in dealing with those to communicate with kids at a different level? Because some kids just communicate differently.
Yeah, you have to. You have to be able to communicate to different kids, and you have to be able to adapt to their different learning styles, right? And so part of my job as a coach is to figure out who responds to what and what buttons to push and when to push them, right? And then the other piece of that I always like to do is I ask questions. Like, I'm not perfect, you know? And so standing in front of that group, if I am getting into them about something, I ask them straight up, like, hey, what's going on? You know, am I wrong here? Am I seeing this wrong? What do you guys see? And so sometimes when you ask that question, you give those kids that maybe aren't responding to that straight up, you know, firing squad mentality, which is not my coaching style at all. You give them an opportunity to shine, you know, and you give them an opportunity to be introspective. And I've said this before, the number one thing that I coached, aside from strength, aside from conditioning, aside from culture, leadership, all that stuff, is perspective. That's the number one thing that I coach, is perspective and being able to zoom out for a second and see the forest through the trees. And so that was always my approach, was ask questions. When in doubt, ask questions and give them an opportunity. Now, if somebody pushes back on that, one of my go-tos was always to walk them through their reasoning, right? So to give you an example, man, I'm not playing. Coach doesn't like me. Why? Why do you think that? Well, he doesn't think that I go hard. Okay. So your response to that is to not go hard. Well, how does that make sense? Who are you punishing in that situation? Because now when it's your opportunity to go in the game, they're not going to put you in the game because you're not going to be prepared, which is just fulfilling the prophecy that you're already talking about here. So a lot of times, again, it goes back to just perspective. I'm just going to walk you back because you're being emotionally influenced right now. You're being influenced by your emotions in the moment. You're tired. You're sick of this stuff. You've probably been running sprints for 6 months in a row now. Like, you just want to put a helmet on and go score. I get it, right? But let's walk back through this and make sure that our reasoning is rational and not emotional.
Thank you for that.
So what's your approach to diving into that with players, trying to figure out who they are, what's making them drive, what makes them tick? Where do you go to find those answers?
Oh, it's relationships 100% of the time. I want to know who you are as a person, right? I want to know your experiences. I want to know your values. Like, what's important to you? How are you motivated? Are you motivated? Are you somebody that's motivated intrinsically, meaning you're motivated by just trying to be the best version of you? Are you somebody that's motivated by being on the scoreboard and being on the front of the program and the Instagram pictures and all that stuff? And there's nothing wrong with that. I just need to know so I know what buttons to hit, right? And then the other big piece, especially with 18 to 22 year olds, man, family. I need to know the family influences. Who was the disciplinarian in the house? Was it mom? Was it dad? What was their style? You know, what kind of environment did you grow up in? All those things, because ultimately these kids are a product of their experiences, their environment, and their values. Like, that's it, right? And so a lot of behaviors are caught, not taught. So I always like to have conversations with the parents too. Like, I always loved when parents would come visit because it gives me insight. Like, I can see, oh, that's why Johnny reacts that way, because mom's got a little bit of an edge to her, right? Or, oh, that's why Jimmy is so driven, because dad's a dog. Like, dad's still got that dog in him, right? And so that always gives me insight. So the number one thing for me is always asking questions. I want to get to know people. And I want you to know that I care about you beyond sports, because then I can say some things to you that maybe you don't want to hear. And maybe you can't hear from a position coach or somebody else who, you know, if you're not producing, you're just going to go to the bench, right? For me, there is no bench. This is the weight room. Everybody's got to work in here. I don't control your playing time. Do I have an influence on those conversations? Sure. But at the end of the day, that's not my call. So I want to get to know you as a human. I want to know what's important to you, what matters. And so that's where I always start. And it's a two-way road. You know, I was always really big on being vulnerable with my players, being vulnerable with my guys, telling them who I am, what matters to me, what's important to me. Like, I show that side of me to them because I think it builds trust.
So let's go back in your story. What was it that was driving you? You talked about those high school years. What habits did you lay down? What dream was driving you through that season of your own life?
Man, going all the way back to high school, honestly, it was just wanting to be accepted. Like, I just wanted to be great at something. So I never met my father, grew up in a single parent household, never had a dad. So winning the approval of my coaches, my friends' dads, people in the community, like, that was really important to me. I was also one of very few African-Americans in the community. And so it was really important for me to be somebody that people respected, you know, and the best way for me to do that at that age was to be a good human first off, but then secondly, be a really good football player. And so some of the habits that I tried to build early and often was like, I'm going to be the first one into the weight room and the last one out. Like, nobody's ever going to question my work ethic. Nobody's ever going to question the way that I prepare for a game. Like, that just was never an option for me. And I was fortunate to be able to be a starter for 3 years. And that just reaffirmed to me, like, oh, hard work pays off. Like, if I'm disciplined and I work out twice a day and I do these things and I show up on time, like, good things happen. Right. And then I just used those as my base habits, you know, for the rest of my life. I just built on top of those. Like, when I got into coaching, it became, okay, I'm just going to show up before everybody else. I'm going to leave after them and I'm going to do more work in between. And if I do that day after day after day, good things happen. Like, it's just, so I think that's where those base habits formed. There was a lot of growing that had to take place, but that was the foundation of it.
That's really an incredible story of adversity, personal adversity matched with a dream and a drive and a vision that obviously has pushed you and continues to push you and motivate you. So let's fast forward all of these years and fast forward past today. What would you say is driving you right now personally?
Oh, it's leaving a legacy for my family. 100%. There's no question about it. I think about it often. It's kind of morbid, kind of dark, I guess, but I think about it often. Like, when I die, man, I want there to be a line out the door, man, standing room only at my funeral. And I want the first person that steps up to say something to me to say, or steps up to say something about me, to walk up to that microphone and say, Kitch left a legacy for his family to be proud of. You know, he inspired greatness in everybody that he came across. He was honest. He was caring. He was driven, and he was committed to growth. And if somebody says that about me at my funeral and I'm watching it from beyond the grave, I know that I became the man that I wanted to be. So that's what drives me every single day.
Yeah, I think it's pretty incredible hearing you. You've mentioned family a few times, your personal family, your players' families, and then that legacy component. And I think the power of the influence of our family, Brian and I talk with teams all the time about our leadership coming from three places. Choices we make every day is probably the least important. The one that doesn't change is how we're just hardwired from birth. But really the one in the middle where the most change happens is nurture. The oughts and shoulds, everything we've learned throughout life that I should do this or I ought to do that or I better do this or else my mama's going to call me by my first name and my middle name. All of those things come from the combination of our life stories. And I think you touching on that, I touch on that with a lot of leaders because you get to work and you start cranking it out. And maybe players go to the gym and start lifting and start running plays. But if you don't really take the time to get to know the people around you, you don't know what it is that's motivating them. And they don't know what's motivating you. And once you get to that level where you really do know what's driving somebody, you're going to make it a whole lot farther together because you look out for each other beyond the action of whatever's right in front of you, corporate or athletic, no matter where you are. It's that getting in the mess together that's going to help everybody reach their true potential.
There's no doubt. And it's something that we talk about a lot. Like I say all the time, I want my business to be a reflection of me. Like, just like any leader, your team should be a reflection of you. Right now, obviously, it's going to change based on the personnel and their vision, their mission, their values as humans, because we all have our own journey, our own experiences and things that brought us to this point. But ultimately, like, I want to know, you know, what drives my team. I want to know, like, the guys that work with me now, like, dude, tell me, what do you want? My business partner, we have these conversations all the time. You know, he just had a son. I'm like, what do you want to leave for your son? Like, what do you want to be the next step for you? You know, another one of my business partners just got married and they bought a house and everything. I'm like, okay, what's next? Like, what drives you? You know, I want to know those things because that's when we can bring all of our visions together and collectively chase something, knowing that the byproduct of us becoming the person that it takes to achieve that will be that we'll be able to have these impacts on our families across the board. So yeah, man, there's no doubt. Like, it can't just be words on a wall. It can't just be like some hashtag that you come up with. I tell CEOs this, like, I don't care how much you paid legal and HR to write that pretty little vision statement. If you guys aren't living it, it doesn't mean anything. You know, it doesn't mean anything. We had a coach that used to always say, you got to take it from the head to the heart. And I think that's the key to building culture. And that's the key to building great leaders.
I remember hearing something kind of like that, from the head to the heart, but it was something like, it's got to fill the space, the 6 inches between the ears, and then the 18 inches from there to the heart. So those are like your two most important measurements there. But so one of the things I want to, again, sort of back up a little bit. So back to, and it's not because I'm just so hung up on college sports, but I kind of am. But back in the strength and conditioning years and your college years of being involved, you encounter this, I'm certain, when you're working with the corporate world as well. In leadership, sometimes folks get hung up with how much challenge to place on someone, or some people don't like to have a lot of challenge placed on them. We try to spin that differently and talk about the support that comes along with the challenge. So in order to really move ahead, you need to be challenged. A great way and a good leader to work with is one who provides requisite support, right, to go along with that challenge. A little bit about yourself, when you were strength and conditioning coaches and you were learning all these things about the athletes, how was your relationship support challenge-wise with those coaches? If it wasn't where you wanted it to be, how did you address it? I mean, and same thing with the athletes. If that question is a fair question, if it's not, let me know and I'll try to reword it.
I think I get where you're going with it. So for me, I'm a little bit different, and I think it depends on your leadership style. I am a little bit more cut and dry, and I am a little bit more challenged than I am support at times. And it's something I've really had to grow in, honestly, throughout my career. I think one of the big things that held me back early on was my empathy, like lack of empathy. I didn't do a great job with that. And I think as I grew, I saw more of the value in the support side, right? And that support came from not so much in the moment. Like I'm not a big, like, I'm trying to think of the best way to word this so that it makes sense.
Well, you don't have to be a coddler, but the support overall.
There's a support there because you know I love you. There's a support there because you know that I care about you as a human. There's a support there because you know that I have your best interests at heart. At the same time, I am going to challenge you to be the best version of yourself. And I do that even now with my relationships with my friends, my relationships with my business partners, my family, my clients. Like, we tell our clients up front, if you're looking for somebody to sing songs in a circle and sing Kumbaya, like, we're not your guys. I'm here to have a hard conversation. But similar to what you said, the expectations have to match the resources, right? Yeah. And the resources have to match the expectations. And so if I'm not giving that support and that love and the prerequisite skill set for you to even execute on what I'm asking you to do, then what's the point, right? So if I'm not being, like, one of the most common phrases in the weight room with me is, that's on me. I got to be a better coach, right? Like, I have to look in the mirror first when I'm challenging someone and they're not meeting the expectation or meeting the standard. It starts with me. There's no bad play. There's no bad teams. There's bad leaders, right? So I have to ask myself, what do I need to do more of? Do I need to give you more instruction? Is it more this? Is it more that? Like, what is it, right? I have to meet you where you're at. And so I think it's never going to be a perfect balance. It's never going to be a perfect balance. And I think if I went too far to the support side, I would lose some of the candor that made me who I was as a coach, you know? So I think you have to learn how to apply it. Now, that being said, I've had this conversation with young coaches before that have watched me and then they've tried to emulate it and they can't, it's not the same. And I'm like, right, that's just my style. Like, these kids know that I love them and I'll bleed for them. And so I can say certain things. You don't have that yet, right? And I also had a body of work that had shown, like, hey, I know where we're going here.
Yeah. In the world of Giant, which Giant Worldwide is who Aaron and I are both certified through, we do have, just to sort of, this will make it make more sense, I think, where I was going with that. We have just a tool called the Support Challenge Matrix, and it's just a quadrant, support on the vertical, challenge on the horizontal, and it names each one of those quadrants. So if you're high support, high challenge, we refer to that as being a liberator. It doesn't mean there's no challenge. It means it's probably as much challenge as you're gonna possibly get, except our role is to provide you all the tools to help you fulfill that challenge. So all the way around to if we have high challenge and low support, it's called dominator. If we have high support and low challenge, it's called protector. So there's negatives and positives to those. And then the one that, you remember the old adage was, hey, if your coach isn't yelling at you, it's because he doesn't care. So that's in the low support, low challenge quadrant called abdicate. That's kind of where I was going with that as you go through. Absolutely, you know, challenge is what moves people, but just it's, we have those times where we get challenged by someone that's supposed to be leading us, but the support, it's not the lovey huggy support that we're looking for. It's more, the tools, the guidance, like you gave me a destination, but you didn't tell me what I'm supposed to use to get there. You haven't given me anything and you expect me to meet this date, but you've given me nothing.
And I think how the challenge is presented is so important as well. Like how you challenge, like how I challenge people. So I think about my core team now as a business owner, like I'm trying to lead these three people and we're going in this direction. But the way that I challenge, you know, my one coworker, one business partner, Josh, is completely different from the way that I challenge my other one, right? And they're both my two highest ranking people in my business, but I challenge them in completely different ways because they respond differently. So I think it all goes back to relationship. And you can look back through all the years of the kids that I've coached. And if we sat down with a roster of them and you named a name, I could tell you like which buttons I was going to hit with that person and what they didn't respond to, you know? And I think that's where a lot of leaders go wrong is you may come in. So I'm thinking about my own example here. Like if somebody comes in a room and they watch me interact with someone, right? And so I'll use an example of one of the guys that his jersey's actually on my wall here. He was one of my favorite guys. The other coaches, if they came in and challenged him the way I challenged him, he would have blew up and he quite literally would have left the room, right? I could get in this kid's grill and we could go back and forth because I also was the same guy that he was calling on Sundays when he needed help with his homework. I was also the same guy that when he was late on rent, I was helping him find a short-term job on campus. Like, so you have to know, right? But on the outside, you wouldn't know that. If you just walked in the room and saw me going after this guy, they'd be like, what is this about? You know, like he's not responding well to that. I can do that because he knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that I support him. Right. And so I think that's a key element to it as well as the individualization of the situation and the context.
Yep. They're very good.
That's a really good example, because if you just took that snapshot without the track record of support, copied and pasted that onto the next person, which so many leaders do. Oh, well, that's just what I'm supposed to do. Or like you said earlier, back to examples from other coaches or family members, parents. Hey, this is how I lead because that's how they showed me to do it. And that copy paste doesn't work. We've got to contextualize it. We'll link to the support challenge matrix in the show notes at newgenerationleader.fm/51. So Kitch, going back, you talked about the idea of getting amped up for a game day, but as a coach, come third down, you can't step on the field. How do you translate that reality into corporate leadership, corporate culture building?
It's trust. It's trust that you have to trust that you have done what you were supposed to do. You've armed your people with the skills and the resources to execute, right? And that was the hardest thing that you have to. And it's tough for leaders because we're high performers. Like that's who leaders are at their core, right? And so it's you growing into, I'm going to be a high performing coach by making sure that my team has all the resources and the prerequisite information to go out there and execute to the best of their ability. And then if they fail, we can watch the tape together and we can learn from that. We can move forward, right? It's difficult for me. I mean, even now, like I'm the kind of person I want to go now and I want to win. Like I'm highly, highly competitive. And so I still run into it, you know, where I get jacked up about something and it's like, I got to slow myself down and remember like, hey, it's not about me. This isn't about me, right? And so that's the challenge, I think, for a lot of leaders is that we have this urge to go and compete. And make no mistake about it, business is a competition. There's a scoreboard, man. It's your balance sheet. It's your market share. It's your profit loss statements. Like it's a business and it is a game and you want to win. But I think it's so important to make sure you're channeling your energy in the right direction and channeling your energy into your people. And that can be really difficult because on the flip side of that, right, when you're all jacked up like that, what's running your decision-making? Your emotions, right? We can't do that as leaders. We have to slow down. So it's a really valuable skill to learn to be able to find space. I call it live in the gap, right? Between that emotional dump, that cortisol dump, that adrenaline dump, whatever it is, and then whatever you do next. Like you got to live in that gap. You got to elongate that and make sure that you respond instead of reacting. And sometimes we see that, and you see it still with college football coaches, man, throwing headsets and doing this and doing that. Like if you ask them, is that the outcome that you wanted? None of them would say yes. You know, they would all say no, but they allowed their emotional state to hijack their decision-making. And so for us in leadership and teaching corporate leaders, it's exactly that. Because how many times throughout a day do you get triggered? I get triggered. Sometimes I'm reading an email and I'm like, what is this guy talking about? You know, and my immediate reaction is I want to text him. I want to call him. I want to be like, yo, figure it out. You know, but you can't do that. And so the big tool there is finding space and being able to respond instead of reacting. And that's a really valuable skill set because it also shows people that you can emotionally regulate, and people that can emotionally regulate are naturally more trustworthy.
100%. So there's a quote on your website, and I want to head towards the close of this conversation with you and ask you about this quote. The quote is from one of your players. My whole life, I've been the best on every team I've played on, and people always tell me to lead, but nobody ever taught me how. That's at the crux of this podcast, every conversation we have, why we teach leadership, because we've seen so many instances of bad leaders. How are you walking through giving people those tools to prep them for what they do need?
Yeah, I think just to give a little context to that statement too, and that quote, that young man that said that was one of the most talented players I've ever coached and was the best leader I had ever coached. And he still felt that way. And so that's where this whole business was born. That's where this whole company came from. Like, Edge was born because he's not the exception to the rule. He's the norm. And so we were built to change that, right? So how we do that and how we try and walk through that with people is, one, we invite them on a journey. I'm not going to give you some magic snake oil guru speech where I'm going to give you three tips and you're going to walk out of this workshop the best leader in the world. Absolutely not. I'm going to challenge you and I'm going to invite you to engage in the process, right? And then on top of that, going back to what we talked about, challenge and support, right? So I'm going to challenge you, but I'm going to support you by giving frameworks and giving actionable things. So what I tell people is I simplify high performance, I simplify leadership, and I simplify culture. That's what I do. Because one of the things you learn very early in a coaching career is that theory is great, but execution is worship. Execution is what wins championships. Execution is what builds legacies. Execution is what builds dynasties. And so whenever I do a workshop with a corporate client, an individual, an athletic client, it doesn't matter. I want you to be able to walk out of that workshop knowing that the tools that I gave you, you can implement, and you're going to see change in your life, in your relationship, in your business today, not tomorrow, not a week from now. You can implement some of this stuff today, and then you can stack on top of it if you're willing to do the work and if you're willing to reflect and re-engage, right? Because it's not a one-shot kill, man. It takes time, and we have to stack these habits and stack these behaviors. So that's the number one way that I try and walk through. And then just being a walking example, man. I practice what I preach. You'll see on my social media, I'm always posting my daily non-negotiables, the things that I do in the morning, my routine. Like, I'm not a guru. I'm just a couple steps ahead of people in the valley. And I just want to make sure that I can help as many people as I can along the way. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. And I'm not preaching from in front of a Lamborghini or a private jet. I'm a normal dude. I just work really hard and I want to help other people have the opportunity to build the life they want.
The New Generation Leader as a book, a concept, a platform was launched in a very similar kind of way with one conversation and one quote. And I asked Norm this question. I ask every guest this question. If you look back over your playing career and now your professional career, what's something you've learned recently that you wish you had learned earlier?
Busy does not equal productive. I think when I was younger, it was more, and it wasn't always the most productive things, right? So busy doesn't equal productive. I think that's the number one lesson that I've learned, even more so in the past 3 years since I've launched a business.
That's a good one. So Kitch, where can people connect with you, follow you online, connect with Edge Leadership Academy, point them in the right direction?
We keep it simple, man. Everything is at Coach D Kitch. So on all the social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever that new one is, Threads or whatever, TikTok, we're on all of them. You'll always see me shooting my mouth off trying to give people the best wisdom that I possibly can. You can also reach us at edgeleadershipacademy.com. We are currently taking clients. We're also taking bookings for the spring and going into next fall. So we're out there. We have our next leadership mentorship group, The Table. We call it The Table because everybody wants a seat at it and everybody wants to bring something to it. So we have that group that'll be launching in November, next cohort of that. So we're out there. Anybody that wants to contact me directly, I'm dkitchen@edgeleadershipacademy.com. I'm always open to chat and see if there's any value that I can add to people.
We'll drop all those links in the show notes again at newgenerationleader.fm/51. I like the fact that you call it The Table. That's one of the chapters in the New Generation Leader book, because the table is a powerful place for so many conversations, and it's a great place to get to know people. So Thanks for stepping in today, sharing a little bit of your story. Even though we're not at an actual table, we'll call this the virtual table. Looking forward to following what you're doing, Kitch. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Brian, my co-host.
Great to meet you, David. Looking forward to following up with you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, man. I had a blast.
I acted like your mother there. Kitch, sorry.
That's all right, man. I still answer to it. It puts a little bit of fear into me.
Yes.
And thanks to Jay Smack, the voice of the New Generation Leader Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the New Generation Leader Podcast. Subscribe today on your podcasting platform. Download the show notes and unlock your true leadership potential at newgenerationleader.fm. Thanks for listening today, and we look forward to seeing you next time on the New Generation Leader Podcast.
Thanks again for listening to today's show. Don't forget to check out the New Generation Leader gift guide at newgenerationleader.fm/gift. Thanks to Brian, Jim, Jay, and the team behind the scenes. We'll see you next time on the New Generation Leader Podcast.